Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Program, which is The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. When you ask for music, you get music. I am your host, Jim Christina, in my little hidden away studio in good old Star, Idaho, speaking directly on the phone with my co-host, lovely Bobby Jean Bell.
Here in Albuquerque, actually at the old Hotel Albuquerque in Old Town Albuquerque, rather than my dining room tonight.
Wow. I guess that's a change, huh?
A little bit.
Wow, man, this has been a week and a half. I swear to God, I could do without this last week.
Oh,
true.
But you I
got these shingles, and it's just like it's killing me.
Oh, you are still suffering.
And now my everything is itching.
Oh well, now you have first person to write about.
Yeah. Thanks.
So an attack of shingles will show up in a near Jim Christina novel. Is that what you're telling us?
You never know.
You
never know. Okay, you know what? Let's get into tonight's show. Tonight's guest is Wes Rand. He is the best-selling author of the Evil Striker series, Left to Die, Crosscut, and Payback is Hell. Rand was inspired by author Ayn Rand and combined with his passion for Western novels and the desire to create something gritty and real, the idea for the Evil Striker series was born. His books follow Striker on the run from a murder he did commit and living in his own code of conduct, killing all who gets in his way, and boy, does he ever. Based on a political world, Rand writes about a mean anti-hero set in a historical West, but these are anything but your grandfather's Westerns. And if you look for Zane Grey or Louis L'Amour, you ain't going to find him in these covers. Wes Rand was an artillery officer in the U.S. Army during the 1960s. He pays alimony. He doesn't like golf, but lives on a golf course. And he's been bucked off a horse and probably a lot more than that. He has a cabin in the mountains where he writes and hikes. And while his wife plays golf in Vegas, Rand enjoys living under the open skies in Nevada and Utah. Please welcome to the Writer's Block for his second trip in, Mr. Wes Rand.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
and having the courage to take another crack at an Evil Striker book.
Well, you know, the last time you were in the studio with us, and it was so much fun. You had your wife with you, and we had a ball.
That was fun.
And tonight's not going to be any different. You're going to have a good time, even though we're all in our separate little cities, wherever.
Yeah, just in case your listeners don't know, I'm in Nevada.
Right, you're in Las Vegas. Bobby Jean is in Albuquerque, and I'm in Star, Idaho. So there you have it.
That's quite a trifecta.
But we're all on the same page.
We are. We're all on the same station, coming to you directly from Los Angeles, California, on LA Talk Radio. So
I'm sorry you have the shingles.
Well, yeah, me too. Believe me too. Okay, I have a question for you. I did not know that you were a best-selling author.
Well, selling quite a few books over in Europe. Apparently, they really like Westerns over there, particularly in Germany.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they have a lot of recreations and stuff over in Germany.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about that last time, but there was a scoundrel, a mm-hmm. vagrant, a thief, a liar named Carl May. May is how you M-A-Y, but it's pronounced Carl May. Back about the turn of the century in 1900, something like that. And while this guy was in jail, he found out that he liked to write Westerns. Oh. And so he started writing them over there. And this guy, although he never came out to the American West, I think he was in New York City for maybe a weekend or something like that. But he actually, according to Cowboys and Indians magazine, Carl May sold more Western books than Zane Grey and Louis L'Amour combined.
Wow.
And so he made the Western popular. And even today, over in Germany, they have all of these huge festivals with 300,000-400,000 and do recreations of these books, these Western scenes that Carl May wrote. Yeah, huge.
Well, we're glad to have you back with us. And although we are not in the studio with you, it will be a fun evening for you as well. I can guarantee you.
Well, so, and I hope that you enjoy it. And thanks for reading the book. And you read a second Evil Stryker book.
Well, you know that's great. That's our deal. We get you on the show. We read your book. That's just part of the deal.
And Jim, don't you want to read the one that he's just working on, Christmas Sleigh? I hope you're going to send that to us when it's done.
Well, yeah. the name of this particular book is To Die For. And Wes, I'm going to have you give us a synopsis of the story before we kind of discuss it a little bit, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. After I finished Payback as Hell, I thought I would write another book where the story takes place in California. I've decided to kind of keep Stryker roaming around California and not get him involved with dusty towns of Arizona and some of the traditional Western areas, but territories, but keep him maybe doing some things in California. And I had read some time ago about the water wars that they had between Los Angeles and up there in Owens Valley around Bishop, used to be called Bishop Creek. And they went up there, the mayor and the civil engineer, chief engineer in Los Angeles, they went up there and hoodwinked the people in Owens Valley and took most of their water. And I thought, well, that would be a good story. And I'll have Stryker get involved in a situation similar to that maybe took place 25 years before mm-hmm. it actually happened. And one of the things about doing some of these stories like this is if you read and do a little bit of research in an area, you can play what if. You know, well, what if George Hurst sent Stryker over there to see what he could do with that situation. So that was... That's how it started, and so Stryker goes to Bishop Creek, and Stryker is probably, as you well know, is not too well versed in the social graces. So
no, he's not.
Whenever he gets involved in negotiations, his negotiations usually take place with a gun and a blade. So that's what Stryker does.
Right. Well, he's a combination. He's kind of like Asian, Mexican, and white.
Yeah, he's like a mixed breed mongrel.
Yeah, he's like the Heinz 57. He
carries. Yeah, he doesn't know his lineage, and he doesn't care.
Right, and he keeps a straight razor with him at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, well, that's used shave
for,
with.
Used for shaving. Most of the time,
right, mm-hmm.
in a back pocket. It's in his back pocket, right?
He also carries that uniquely Chinese weapon with him.
Yeah,
the side.
Tell us. I'm trying to picture that. Tell us a little bit. That was fascinating. And oh, he uses that. Oh man.
Yeah, actually, the side was a farming tool in Asia, became a weapon fighting against the samurai swords in Okinawa. They used them in pairs, but I decided in the early going that I would have Stryker only carry one down the patch in his pouch in his back, because two back there would probably be unwieldy. Plus, fighting with the Sai, unless you're fighting to block a sword or a staff, fighting with the Sai is probably okay, maybe even preferred with just one. It's a fork-like weapon where you have three tines, like little spears off of the handle. The center one is very long, maybe 12, 14 inches, and then you have two side tines on each side of the long one, and they'll run up. They're curved, and they'll run up maybe 4 or 5 inches. I actually worked with this. I studied some of the arts, Tai Kung Fu, back when I was a lot younger, in the 30s, my 30s. And we had to choose a weapon to fight with, and I chose that one. So I'm a little familiar with it. I took 8 years. I got up to one belt, the low black belt. And I know a little bit about using the Sai as a weapon. And fighting with one Sai actually gives you one free hand to pull the opponent or the enemy, victim, whatever, pull them in close so that you can kill them.
Right.
So you can't, it's not a long range weapon, so you need to get in close so you can, so you can do some damage with them.
I learned a long time ago, especially with martial arts, is that the more belts you earn, the better off you are, because without them, your pants fall down.
Yeah, or I guess, or unless you're belting back a few in a bar.
Oh, I've been known to do that. I've never gotten to the black belt, though. But
well, I didn't either. I got to where I was breaking ribs and knuckles, and I was 40 years old. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to quit. And then my instructor, the Grandmaster Ralph Anderson here in Las Vegas, ended up dying suddenly. And so so I quit and gave it up. So that's been, I'll date myself, that's been over 30 years ago now.
Oh, wow.
So wow. I probably couldn't punch my way out of a paper bag, man. I'm not even sure I could outrun anybody.
Yeah, that's why they invented handguns.
Yeah.
Anyway, George, you haven't hooked up with George Hurst again. And George Hurst, of course, was at this particular point in time, he was a senator, not yet a newspaper owner, but a miner, and a bully, and quite a heavy character back in the old West, especially in the 1870s, 1880s. How did you manage to just pick George Hurst to hook him up with?
I just happened to run into the guy. I've been to the Hearst Castle there in Central California.
San Simeon.
Several times. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the books that I picked up, I was reading, and it talked about his father, William Randolph's father.
Right.
William Randolph Hearst. His father had made quite a bit of money in the mines, and he'd left a considerable amount, $20 million, in fact, to William Randolph. And so I thought, well, I'll read a little bit about this guy. And he's a fascinating character. George Hurst came from Missouri, got no education, worked in the mines, I forget how many years, 15 or 20 years. And he finally started buying ownership in some of the mines, and ended up making close to $20 million at that time, which would be close to like $500 or $600 million in today's dollars.
Right. Well, he bought one mine that actually took him very little effort, but it hit big.
Yeah, it was in Virginia City.
The
Comstock
yes.
load.
The Comstock, yes. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And part of the true story is that he was playing poker one night, and he actually won the San Francisco Examiner in a poker game. And once again, and this was in the Payback as Hell book, I did what if. Well, what if George had trouble collecting on that bet, you know, getting the paper?
Right.
So that's why he sent Stryker out on that first mission. And then once he was successful with that, I thought, well, I'll start having Stryker go on these dangerous secret missions for George Hurst. I can just build stories after that, one right after the other.
It's kind of like Paladin putting on his business card, Have Gun, Will Travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or an Old West Mission Impossible.
With a sigh and a straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and not a lot of dialogue like Mission Impossible. We have a lot of action. Sparse dialogue.
Yeah, Stryker doesn't talk a lot.
Yeah, action is his vocabulary.
Yeah, he lets his bullets do his talking for him. I had a friend at UNLV. She taught creative writing. Her name is Faye Fine. And one of the things that she told me, if you're going to make these kind of adventure stories like this, or write these adventure stories, make your protagonist bigger than life. So I decided to make Stryker really big.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that works.
Mm-hmm. That works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely did. Let's take a real brief break here, and how about we hear a little bit about Out West, Ronan?
The Writer's Block is sponsored by Out West Shop, your online portal to great Western apparel. Log on to outwestshop.com to see the latest in men's and women's Western and country Western inspired apparel and accessories. Click on Out West Live for on-demand live Western music concerts, Western music and equestrian lifestyle radio show podcasts, as well as this one, The Writer's Block. Why not listen while you shop? Use coupon code RADIO to save on your purchases this month. OutWestShop.com delivers the West to you no matter where you hang your hat, door to door and around the world. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
And that is truly the truth. Yes, indeed. And that is for Out West. And of course, that is the purveyors are Bobby Jean and Jim Bell. And of course, you're listening to Bobby Jean right now, as a matter of fact. And it's not, it's great, 7:17 in the evening, and we're on the air with Mr. Wes Rand, the best-selling author of the Stryker series, the Evil Stryker series, which incidentally should not be confused with Jeff Stryker, who is one of my characters, who is far from evil.
The opposite.
Exactly the opposite.
Well, we probably should tell where Evil got the name. His name is actually Neville Stryker, and he used to be a major in the Army. But over the years, the weather and use wore some of the lettering off of his saddle skirt. And so what's left of Neville is Evil. And most people think that that name fits him better anyway.
Well, yeah.
And that was very clever. I mean, that's a neat, that's a neat way to set that up.
In this book, To Die For, I actually give him, you may recall in the story, I actually have him a couple of times show a little bit of a less than evil side. Not a lot, because I can't destroy this character. He's a badass.
Because as we all know, Neville Stryker is a badass.
But it gives him a little complexity, which I liked. It takes him a little less, not cartoonish in that he's not serious, but the fact that he just can bounce back from everything or hand it out and keep going. It gives us there's more human there than if he was just kind of a machine.
Right. He reminds me of a character that can get the crap kicked out of him in a ditch. Crawls up in the road, sticks out his thumb, gets a ride from a trucker. By the time he gets to the truck stop, he's all healed up and he's ready to go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's who reminds me of.
Well, there's one line really early in the book when you say, I won't find it. He's alive, and then he knows he only knew he existed, and one day he would not. And, I just thought there was a powerhouse of of thinking there with those few words. You really yeah, sum him up right there.
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't get into mysticism. Mm-mm. He's a pragmatic, practical man. In one of the books, I think it was Cross Cut, he runs into a clergy, and they get into a talk of with the metaphysical and so forth. And this clergyman wants to know Stryker's position on the deity. And Stryker at that point told him, me and God leave each other alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as well he should, probably.
Yeah. So he's just, he exists. He knows he exists, and one day he won't. One day a bullet will be faster than his, and that'll be the end.
Yep.
But not for a while.
Well, let's hope not. I mean,
let's
hope
not.
Stories are fun, so.
Yeah. He showed, I thought, a little bit underside there with, I forget the guy, Alfred, I think, the man that he met in the train station.
Yes.
And that guy got killed. And I don't know if you recall what happened there, that this man, well, Stryker himself has a tragic past. You know, his wife got killed, and Stryker murdered the man most responsible for it. That's why he's on the run, by the way. But he met this man who had spent, I don't know how many years in prison because he was involved in a murder and a mugging, which the man himself did not commit, but he was running with a gang, and he just thought his life was worthless, and he hadn't gotten married, and not treating his wife well, and he died. He got knifed and died, and Stryker actually kind of befriended the guy. Mm-hmm. And I wrote where the man didn't know it, but that while he was in prison, his wife came to visit him several times, but they wouldn't let her in. She was pregnant, and he thought, Alfred just thought that he lived a worthless life, and died, but I actually had him have a descendant that went down and saved the president's life later in history. So,
wow.
And then with Susan Peters, the crippled girl who had been shot and was crippled.
Oh, yes.
And in a lot of pain, and she was starving herself to death.
Yes.
Well, she was an actual person. She was an actress in Hollywood, and she bent down to pick up a 22 on a hunting outing. The gun went off, and the bullet lodged in her spine, and she was in terrible pain, and she began to starve herself. She went to a ranch in California and began to starve herself, and she actually starved herself to death, and that's how she died in real life. So I had her get together with Stryker, and Stryker took her out, and while they're looking at the scenery and so forth, he doesn't realize why he's been asked to take her for a ride out to look at some of the scenery a few miles away. Uh-huh. And then finally, she says, aren't you supposed to do something? And then he realizes he's supposed to put her out of her misery. And that's what he does. He blows her brains out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Stryker's version of compassion.
Well, yeah, and with the three sisters, the revival gang, little group there, and you know he's willing to step in and take the role. That's another time when he sort of acted. I thought, well, this is a different kind of turn of events here, and again, you showed us another little part of him, and then that was very interesting how that storyline developed.
Well, he's supposed to get into this town in disguise, incognito, for Senator George Hearst, because this is a delicate situation. You know, he's a senator. George is a senator for the North and the South. You know, he's a U.S. senator. So he has to be kind of low-key here. So Stryker has to go in and be low-key himself and in disguise. So when he ran into the three female gospel singers, the Righteous Sisters, he decides maybe he would hook up with that, but then after a while he decided, no, I can't do this, and so that other boy came in, and so he had him dress in the uniform, Elvin.
A little a little nod to Elvis Presley, I did think, as I was reading.
Yes, that's true. Well, I do live in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. And at least you didn't use Hunka Hunka Burning Love.
So. No, I had them singing some kind of gospel tune, I think, up on a mountain. Oh, go tell it on the mountain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they were, I think it helps when you write these stories like that, that you add in different characters to put meat on the bones, put some flesh out there to not just a one line of action that takes place, but bring in some interesting characters to interact with each other and with Stryker.
Right. Do you find as you're writing that as you introduce foils to your protagonist, that sometimes the foils become so good that they come back?
Well, I brought, yes, in Payback as Hell, the third book, he actually has a confrontation with a Paiute Indian. His name is Tunug. And I like this guy. He's a brave, a Paiute savage, and in some ways is almost as savage as Stryker is. So I like this guy. And in the fifth book, which the Christmas Sleigh, Sleigh, of course, spelled S-L-A-Y,
right.
I bring Tunug. And because in that story, I'm getting ahead of myself, but in that story, there's going to be a situation where a bad guy, Stryker needs to get some information out of a bad guy. And I can't have Stryker torture somebody. That's not what he does. He just, you know, he kills efficiently, but he's not going to torture somebody.
Right.
So I needed someone mm-hmm. else to do the torturing. So I bring back this person, Tunug, who eventually becomes not exactly friends, but they do work together. So he brings in Tunug, and Tunug does the dirty work.
Mm-hmm. Like Tonto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he's an Indian, savage, Paiute, had some dealings with the Utes, which were really bad people. He learned how to extract information from somebody.
There you go.
And he does. And he
okay.
does.
Here comes the question. And, I don't recall, and I, mea culpa, I did not listen to your last interview. So I don't remember if I asked you this question or not, but where did this character come from the deep, dark recesses of your brain? You had to have been like, had the flu or something. I don't know. This is a character that you wouldn't think of.
Well, I read all of the Edge books, the Edge series by George Gilman.
Right.
And then there was maybe getting into a little bit of a my first wife died when she was young, 24. And so I experienced that tragedy. And so I thought I'd put that into the stories with Stryker.
Okay.
And everyone that he gets close to ends up dead. And so I thought I would throw in the tragic part, and then also just make him mean as a rattlesnake. And then in the third book, I stumbled on the George Hurst, and I thought, well, you know, I think this might be the making of a good series. So,
mm-hmm.
so I started putting those things together. And I don't know about you, Jim, but sometimes when I start writing, I'll start writing a story or a scene or whatever, and then the damn thing just writes itself. And
oh, absolutely.
I'm just reading it. I'm just reading it as it appears on the page.
Absolutely. It happens to me all the time. But that's when you get to know your character so well.
Yeah.
They actually will write the book for you.
Yeah. Isn't that something? And people, there are people who don't write fiction, or I guess like my wife, she doesn't really imagine a lot of things, and she doesn't understand how a person can do that. And I, for myself, I can't understand how a person cannot do it. And when it goes like that, it makes writing so much fun. You'll sit down and you'll think, okay, I'm going to try to get and knock out 500 words. And before you know it, you've written 700, 800, 900 words and right in the scene. And it's, you look down and see how many word count you, what the word count is at the bottom of the page. You say, wow, I didn't realize I wrote that much. Because it was fun.
You know, one scene that was fun as a reader, because this book starts off fast. We've got, you know, murders that happen on page 5. We have an amazing sex scene on page 11. And you've either put the book aside because you can't handle it from the get-go, or you're like, oh my God, what's next? but as you take us through these fast-paced things, and sometimes as a reader, we do need that little bit of a moment to breathe. I really enjoyed the scene. He's on a train with two young women that get on. And your description of them, and then how they get on the train, and there's no place to sit, and the dialogue with them is sort of, well, it's dialogue that's appropriate to the book, but not necessarily what one would think. Is this the way people really talked to each other in this time period on a train? And so there were all kinds of little surprises. That was a very enjoyable read, the time with them.
Yes, it was. I forget. One girl's name was Lake, and I forget what the other girl's name was.
And I didn't write them down.
These are like little vignettes that you stick into the story. You can't always have blood and guts. So you give a little pause there. I don't want to say it's a Shakespearean comedy relief, but it's a little bit of stepping away from blood and guts. And I thought introducing these two young girls, who turned out to be lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
And Stryker is not, he's okay with that. And at the end, they send him a note and invite him to meet up with them in Tahoe. And he has a tough time getting back on the train to go on down to Bishop.
it was a fun scene. Yeah.
Even Stryker needs a little recreation.
Well, he does get some of that.
He does.
I was one editor, not the one that I'm working with now, but another editor had questioned mixing the genres together, where you have an action thriller, Western book, and then you put some sex in there. When I wrote the first book, A Little F to Die, I just wanted to write what I wanted to read, and I did, and I put some sex in it. And then my wife's friends, or I'll call them old lady golf buddies, read that first book, and I was appalled because I thought, Jesus Christ, this is some really raw stuff. And so when I wrote the second book, Cross Cut, I left out a lot of the sex. I hardly put any in there. Well, boy, did I hear from them. They wanted to read about the sex.
You got to watch out for women, Wes.
Yeah, I guess so. And this is about the time, I think, that the 50 Shades of Grey was out there. And everyone said that the writing was horrible, but they couldn't put the book down. I think she sold, 50 million books or something?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, okay, I'm going to put sex back in there. And because apparently that's well received. And so I put it in.
There you go. Well, Bobby we need to take another break real quick, and let's have a little word from our one of our sponsors, which is LA Talk Radio.
Ronan.
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you could find them at www.creative-edge.services. Winter companions, the old
men. And that was actually Creative Edge, who is one of our major sponsors on the Writer's Block. It is now 7:34, yeah, it's getting up there. And we are on the air with Mr. Wes Rand. And if you want to call and talk to Wes tonight, the number in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Okay, Wes, let's get a little bit into your creativity and your process.
Okay. Go ahead.
When is your most favorite time to write?
Oh, okay. Early in the morning, but I can only do that on the weekends. I really like getting up early in the morning, probably most of the time before dark or before light, mm-hmm. while it's still dark. I'll go out and get a good strong cup of coffee and come back. I don't sit at a desk to write. I sit in a big overstuffed chair, which is where I'm sitting now, and I have it's a board. It's a writing board. I put my laptop on that, and I sit here and drink coffee, and I write. And I'll usually spend a couple hours doing that on Saturdays and Sunday mornings. Then and during the week, I get home in the afternoon. I do a workout, and then I'll spend an hour, hour and a half, Monday through Friday, writing the stories while my wife is downstairs doing dinner. I have a cabin, I think you mentioned that, up in Utah, and that's right. Where I'm going this weekend. And so I really like going up there and writing, because then I'm not interrupted by anybody. And I can usually knock out a couple thousand words over a weekend. And that's what I plan on doing this weekend.
Oh, okay. Sounds like a pretty good regimen, actually, if you can, you know, keep doing. What is your day job? I don't think I ever asked you that before.
I would like to say like I'm a collection agent for the mob or something like that. But no, I'm a stockbroker. I've been a stockbroker for 44 years.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, there's nothing embarrassing about that. It's kind of like a collection agent for the mob, don't you think?
Yeah. No, it's a respectable business. I don't do the penny stocks or anything like that.
Gotcha. So. Well, Bobby Jean, I know you're sitting there with a list of questions.
Well, I really don't. I have one, because when I went to prepare for today, I found, of course, some information about you on Smashwords. And I don't know that we've ever, Jim, I don't think we've ever really talked about some of these Goodreads and some of these other platforms that authors and readers use. And I just wondered if you could take a moment and maybe talk about Smashwords and how you hooked up with that, and how have you used it, and maybe just, you know, talk about that a little bit.
You know, I often tell people this: if you think writing is hard, wait till you try selling.
Oh yeah.
Smashwords allowed me to get books published and go into Barnes and Noble and have readings and book sellings, book signings and whatever in Barnes and Noble. They have an arrangement where you can get the books in there, and it's Barnes and Noble's not out of pocket to bring those books in. So it's a good way to get yourself into an established bookstore like Barnes and Noble, and I've done that a few times. It works out quite well. I use the social media. I got a college student and a high school student. Both of them girls are my wife's goddaughters, and they help me with the social media. They do the Goodreads, they do the Facebook, Instagram, and what's the other one?
There's like even some of these things that, you know, there's like Reddit. There's all kinds of. There's so many places now.
There are everywhere.
Yeah. And the young folks, they keep up with, nobody's doing that one anymore, you know, granddad.
Right.
You need to be doing this one now. You need to be on Snapchat now, you know, or whatever. It's like you have to have people that are dialed into that.
Well, right. Either that or you're going to be 12.
Yeah.
If you're 12,
they're born in the womb and knowing how to do all that stuff. And yeah, that's right. And so I don't know how to do that. I just want to write books.
Right.
So we got these youngsters to help me out, and they're doing a good job. What I do for them, though, is I send them blogs and sayings and so forth, and updates and things like that that they can work into the social media outlets that they have.
Yeah, so you're providing content, and they're just helping to figure out where to place it, when to place it, and how to keep it in front of the view.
Right. I enjoy the writing and developed in the stories and using the imagination. And I don't want that, all these other things, to get in the way of the creativity and the enjoyment of writing. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sure most writers feel that way, that the most important and enjoyable thing for them is just getting the story out there and getting it down on paper.
Exactly.
And all the other stuff is a real pain in the butt.
Yep. And putting down the very best story you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You want it to come across as professional. You don't want it to look amateurish. But first thing you have to do is get to, and I, this is really wild, but one of the best pieces of information I ever got was from Snoopy's writing life. You know, Snoopy.
It was a cold and windy night.
Dark and stormy night. They put together the writing life for Snoopy, and it's where all of these famous authors wrote in to Snoopy to give him information, to give him advice on how to write books, and it's actually good information. It's not like they're trying to be funny or anything like that. It's actually good advice that these authors, these famous authors, give him to try to help him, because he's experienced writer's block because he can't get past "it was a dark and stormy night," you know? So they send in these, there must be like 50 authors who wrote in to give Snoopy advice. One of the authors wrote something that stuck with me, and she said, and I can't remember her name, I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but I can't remember her name, but she said, you know, editors and publicists and they can correct your grammar, but only you can tell the story. And I thought that was really good advice.
Mm-hmm.
absolutely. I'm going to take another real quick break here, and Ronan, if I just sent you a message, if you wouldn't please. Let's hear it from LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA, and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com.
And that, of course, is Apache. Speaking of great music. And we are... Yeah, there you go. It's now 7:43, and we are on the air with Mr. Wes Rand out of Las Vegas, not Los Angeles. I mean, we're supposed to be there, and talking about his book, To Die For, and his process, in which we were just about to ask him the $50 million question. And Bobby Jean, I believe it's your turn.
So tell us if you, like Snoopy, get writer's block. Or not? Do you believe in it or not? If you get it, what do you do about it?
No, I don't think I do get writer's block. In fact, I'm sure I don't. What I do have is like when I'm trying to develop a scene and I know that I want it to go a certain way. And so I need to get the scene developed in my mind. So sometimes when I can't sleep at night, I'll go over the scene and try to figure out, okay, how am I going to work this? But I've never gotten to the part where I said, geez, I don't know what to write about, which I thought was writer's block. So I never have that. But I do have situations where I'm trying to develop a scene and I want to make sure that it flows correctly, you know, that it goes the way that it's supposed to go. So the famed writer's block, no, not that I can think of. But wow. I want to ask you a question, Bobby Jean.
Yeah.
I haven't asked these other women. There's probably 30 or 40 of my wife's friends who read these things. How do you, the sex that's in the stories, there's like one or two sex scenes that I normally stick in there in the Western story. Mm-hmm. And I get this advice from one or two, don't mix the genres. Don't mix sex with the Western stories. But on the other hand, I've gotten this positive feedback from these other people who read the books, and they, particularly the women, and they like them. So I want to ask you, what's your opinion on that?
I think that they belong in your books. I don't know that I would say that for all the Western fiction writers, some of the others that I've read, but I believe that those scenes belong in Stryker's world and this world and this man's life you've created. And I don't see it as a mixture of genres, as you said. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had an author with a really fun, cozy mystery, and we talked about some of the sort of rules of a cozy mystery, and one being that sex is not in the story. There can be some titillating moments, or you have a feeling that, you know, there's the love emerging between the two main characters, but nothing's on the page. Nobody stays overnight even. I mean, it's very chaste. And that's the way it's supposed to be in a cozy mystery. But I feel in the genre, the way that you are writing your story, it is absolutely appropriate. And it would be very odd not to have it appear there. Because you give us raw life. Yes. It belongs there.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear you say that. Because, yeah, these... The writing every place else is bold and raw, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and unapologetic. And then for me to tiptoe around a sex scene, it seems like
it would be uncharacteristic for him.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Right. All right.
You wouldn't be true. You would not, he probably would not let you admit that, because you created a real blood and guts and breathing guy, and I think the way you write them is absolutely also truthful for him.
Good.
I
don't carry it on for like a full chapter, you know.
No,
a,
and why not?
Page and a half.
Let's have more.
Why, Bobby Steve, though?
You know, Jim, I think my wife's golfing buddies have got something here.
Well, but, they have. I mean, you know, I put sex in one book, and I killed her off. I just couldn't do it. That was in Still Waters. I just had to. But that was like, it was an accident more than anything.
Well, sometimes that's what sex is.
Well, yeah. But most of my characters are out in the middle of nowhere, and they don't run across women very often. So,
yeah, you know, maybe a sheep or two or something like that. But,
well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, you read what Long Ride to Morning. So,
yes.
Yeah,
yes, I did. And I bought the other book.
Oh, you did? Jefferson's Chance.
Yes, I bought it. And although I haven't started it, but I can see it's an intriguing book. It's something. It's about a character that I had not thought about before, where you have a handicapped Western character.
Nice. Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to reading it, because I think it'll be an interesting read.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you will enjoy it. And real briefly, you'll find out that although the captain of the Texas Rangers sends him on a fool's errand, he's anything but a fool. And uh-huh. Turns out to be not even close to being a fool. So okay. I think by the time you get to the end of the book, you're going to go, wow. Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that although he's handicapped with a wooden leg, his upper torso is not quite as handicapped.
Well, once you get into the story, you'll learn that he's not really so handicapped after all. So,
mm-hmm.
But anyway,
well, I look forward to reading it.
Well, we look forward to having you read it. And you know what, Rest, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us and giving up your evening to be here on our little radio show and all the people that are listening to it live and the hundreds of thousands that will listen to the podcast.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I really enjoyed being on the air with you, too. You guys are lots of fun.
Well, we enjoy having you, and make sure you keep in touch with Jerry. And when this other book is ready to go and you want to release it, give us a holler and give Jerry an email, and we'll get you set up for another show.
Yes, it's a touching Christmas story. Stryker uses guns and blades to do his
thing. There you go. Yeah. We like it.
Love it.
We love it. And sleeps with half the women in the town. I like it. Okay, Wes, take care, my friend.
Thanks, Jim. And
you okay.
too, Bobby.
And Bobby,
thanks, Wes.
Next week, we have Dwayne Clayton with us. He is actually one of Creative Edge's writers. And he'll be with us next Thursday. And, of course, Russ will be with me, and you'll have a night off. And it's going to be, I think, fun because, of course, I'm a Creative Edge author as well. So that ought to be fun for me. And it's Dwayne Clayton. And I haven't even gotten to his books yet, so I have to get on that. But thanks for showing up, Bobby. Love to have you. Always love to.
Yeah, I don't like to miss it.
I know. We love you. And for Bobby Jean Bell, myself, and Russ Avison, who will be on next week with me, for the Writer's Block for LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.